Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. You're listening to KFSK. It's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, the 2nd of March, 2021. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Petersburg Medical Center announced yesterday it learned of a potential breach of federal health care privacy law with some patients' medical records, but the community hospital says the information was not released outside of its walls. Angela Denning reports.
According to a press release, the hospital found that an employee viewed records of patients who were not directly under their care. This could violate federal health care privacy laws, known as HIPAA, or the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, along with the hospital's code of conduct. The hospital says it began an internal investigation as soon as it learned a potential violation occurred. PMC maintains it is an internal breach only, and that the patient's medical information has not gone beyond the medical center. While the information may have been inappropriately viewed, no further disclosure of it occurred. The medical center has contacted by mail the patients whose medical records may have been affected. In the press release, PMC says it, quote, deeply regrets that one of its employees acted in a manner that violates PMC rules, policies, and procedures, as well as violating trust with PMC patients, end quote. The federal law requires healthcare providers and insurers to take steps to limit access to a patient's information and ensure that information is not shared without consent. Patients have the right to access their own health records and learn who else has had access to them. It also requires healthcare providers to train employees about complying with privacy law. All PMC employees receive training on this, the statement said. PMC says it took steps to prevent the offending employee from having any access to medical center records now or in the future. The hospital also says it is taking measures to prevent any reoccurrence within the organization. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Patients who have received a notification letter and anyone else with questions or concerns about the breach can contact Chad Wright, PMC's compliance officer. His number is 772-5724, Monday through Friday between 8 and 5. Also, CEO Phil Hofstetter plans to discuss HIPAA and the breach during a PMC live show coming up this Thursday at 12:30 here on KFSK. For the first time in over a week, Petersburg's active COVID-19 case count dropped yesterday. Petersburg's Emergency Operations Center reported 56 active cases Monday. That number reflects two new cases reported and nine people listed as recovered. The community hit a peak of 63 active cases on Saturday and Sunday. That's according to the latest figures from the EOC. Petersburg will remain on high-risk red level for the next week, and that will be reassessed next Monday. In a press release yesterday, local health officials thanked businesses for taking steps to slow the spread. Many closed for the past week or changed to telephone service or takeout only. The EOC is asking residents and businesses to continue with health precautions to keep numbers declining. Petersburg residents are reporting scam robo phone calls regarding their Social Security accounts.
This call is from the Social Security Administration. We regret to inform you that your Social Security number ending has been compromised for some suspicious and fraudulent activities, and we have received orders from the state authorities to suspend your Social Security number on immediate basis.
That's a message that Petersburg resident John Haverlick found on his answering machine last month. The caller had the correct last four digits of his Social Security number, but Haverlick recognized it as a scam and reported it rather than returning the call. He's hoping no one is taken in by it.
It's always upsetting when someone has your personal information. We've heard for several months that these calls have existed, but until you actually get it, you don't realize that how realistic and invasive it is. So I'm not pleased.
The Federal Trade Commission reported this as the top scam reported to that commission in December of 2019. A blog post says the real Social Security Administration will never call to threaten your benefits or tell you to wire money or put money on a gift card. There's also more information about this scam on the Social Security Administration's website. And residents should not return unknown calls or should hang up on callers that sound like a scam. At the same time, people in the area may be getting legitimate calls from state contact tracers looking to investigate the COVID-19 outbreak here in Petersburg. Public health nurse Aaron Michaels says those state workers will be seeking information on your symptoms, what kind of job you work, and close contacts.
And we'll ask questions, some basic demographic questions like your name. We may ask you to confirm your birthday so that way we know we're talking to the right person, because sometimes people have the same name but different birthdays and we don't want to talk to the wrong person. So we may ask that person to confirm their birthday. We wouldn't be asking social security numbers or bank accounts or anything like that. We wouldn't be asking for any money.
She says people who are unsure about whether a contact tracer's call is legitimate can always ask to call that person back and then look up their name on the state's website to confirm. A bill to reestablish a surcharge for sport fishing licenses to fund Alaska hatchery programs got its first hearing in the state legislature late last month. House Bill 80 was heard in the House Fisheries Committee February 23rd. It would reimpose an additional fee on sport fishing license. As drafted, that would be $4 more for residents and anywhere from $4 to $40 more on a non-resident license. That surcharge money would go into an account to be used only for maintenance and operations of state hatcheries and sport fish enhancement in Southeast. A similar fee was charged between 2005 and 2020 to pay back bonds for construction of hatcheries in Anchorage and Fairbanks, along with production of 1.4 million Chinook salmon in Southeast Alaska's inside waters from existing hatcheries near Petersburg and Juneau. Dave Rutz, director of the Division of Sport Fish, told the committee that the end of that surcharge meant the loss of $500,000 to pay for production of those hatchery king salmon.
Losing this level of funding to support existing enhancement activities will be detrimental to Southeast Alaska sport anglers and charter operators, which have already been highly impacted due to COVID by out-of-state travelers to the state.
The bill was introduced by the Dunleavy administration and is one of the main legislative priorities for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game this session. It's estimated the new charge would raise over $4 million a year, which is about $2 million less than the prior one. Committee Chair Kodiak Republican Louise Stutz wondered why the bill did not seek to reestablish the full amount of that old fee.
As the chair of fisheries for the past 6 years and a member of the budget subcommittee, I know firsthand the budget struggles that the department faces. In this environment fiscally that we're facing, as well as the challenges facing the Chinook salmon, this seems like an excellent opportunity for funding that is desperately needed, and you have mentioned several times in your statement. I would point out that 82% of this revenue collected is from non-residents.
Stutz backed a similar bill last year that did not pass both chambers before the Capitol shut down for the pandemic. Rutz replied that Fish and Game did not want to seem greedy and had made promises that the surcharge would go away after the bond debt was repaid. Other revenue collected from this new surcharge would pay for maintenance and upkeep of state hatchery facilities. The committee planned another hearing on that bill that was at 10 this morning. For the fourth year in a row, weekly summer water quality tests show that most Ketchikan beaches have elevated levels of bacteria that could make people sick. That happened this year even without dozens of cruise ships sailing through the Inside Passage and discharging wastewater. As Eric Stone reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, it's less of a surprise than you might think.
Ketchikan's federally recognized tribe has been working with Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation to monitor fecal coliform and enterococci bacteria levels at Ketchikan's beaches since 2017. But Meredith Pokart of the Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition told attendees at a recent public meeting that this year was different.
2020 gave us a really unique opportunity to monitor for bacteria around Ketchikan without cruise ships, and we were still seeing pretty elevated levels.
At some sites, bacteria levels were higher than they'd ever been. Others, like the city's Thomas Basin Harbor, saw improvements that regulators credit to sewer line repairs.
And so that just opens up some more question and hopefully some more dialogue.
That cruise ships don't appear to be contributing to Ketchikan's beach bacteria problem isn't as surprising a conclusion as it might seem. Just for some quick background, fecal coliform bacteria levels are measured in colony-forming units per 100 milliliters. In simple terms, you take a water sample, drop that onto a petri dish, and count how many bacteria colonies form. Do some math, and bing, bang, boom, you get the standard bacteria unit for fecal coliform, CFU per 100 milliliters. Cruise ships' wastewater has to average less than 14 CFU per 100 milliliters. DEC's Gretchen Augett put that in perspective.
That's extremely low, extremely safe. It is what we use as our most stringent fecal coliform criteria in the state.
So, in theory, you could safely swim right next to cruise ships' wastewater pipes. You could harvest mussels and clams and eat them raw, assuming they're not tainted by other toxins. That 14 CFU number, that's less bacteria than is allowed in Ketchikan's drinking water reservoirs. Cruise ships are able to achieve those low bacteria levels because they have advanced treatment systems on board. But on shore, Ketchikan's wastewater treatment plants are far less effective. Take Ketchikan's city-run Charcoal Point wastewater plant. Here's Meredith Pocard again.
And so you can see that on a daily level, the Charcoal Point is permitted to discharge 1.5 million CFU.
That's the maximum limit for a day. Over a month, it's required to average no more than 1 million CFU per 100 milliliters. That's more than 70,000 times the limit for cruise ships. The plant is allowed to put out that much bacteria because it's exempt from some requirements of the Federal Clean Water Act. It's only required to do what's called primary wastewater treatment, essentially letting solids settle out of the water before shooting it into the sea. Ketchikan's city-run plant is not required to do secondary treatment, which uses bacteria to break down waste products and generally results in cleaner water. And it's not the only plant like that in the area. Wastewater facilities in Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, Haines, and Skagway have similar permits and are allowed to put out similarly high concentrations of bacteria. But Pocart says DEC and the Watershed Coalition aren't pointing fingers.
One of the important things to point out is we don't know and we can't currently tell the magnitude of each source's contribution to the bacteria levels that were seen at the sampling locations.
She says leaky septic tanks, pet waste, small boat harbors, and private sewer systems are other potential sources for bacteria. And there's reason to believe Charcoal Point isn't the problem. The city of Ketchikan tracks bacteria levels in and around the 2-mile mixing zone near the plant, and for at least the past year, bacteria have stayed below state standards. And a separate water quality study sponsored by DEC also found low levels of bacteria near the sewer plant. The only location that tested above standards in that study was a small boat harbor, Thomas Basin. But environmental regulators are sounding the alarm. DEC recommends that all of the Ketchikan beaches tested, except for popular Rotary Beach and Mountain Point Surprise Beach, be included on the EPA's impaired waters list. That would require the state to come up with a plan to address the bacteria problem. DEC's Chandra McGee explains.
We'll be working with the community on a watershed plan and in implementing actions from that plan to hopefully bring all of these beaches back into compliance with water quality standards in the future.
And while DEC has monitored Ketchikan's beaches since 2017, it's not stopping there. Monitors sampled waters all over the state this summer, taking advantage of low cruise ship traffic to establish a baseline, says DEC Environmental Program Specialist Brock Tabor.
We're specifically looking for pollutants, a couple different things. We're looking at bacteria concentrations, which is of great interest to the public. We're also looking at select metals that we identified to be associated with cruise ship discharges in the past.
The study's data is preliminary, but it found high levels of bacteria near small boat harbors around the state. Juneau, Wrangell, Petersburg, Homer, Valdez, and, of course, Ketchikan. And in Seward and Nome, monitors found elevated levels near the city's commercial and cruise ship docks. That study also found high levels of dissolved copper and nickel at several sites in Kinnick Arm near Anchorage. Those can be toxic to marine life. Tabor says DEC plans to continue water sampling in 2021. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
And for KFSK News, I'm Joe Vignicki.